I'm your host, Azadeh Erdekani, Project Director of Innovation Forum's 2018 Sustainable Agriculture Conference. The conference is taking place April 5th and 6th in Washington, D.C. Today, I am interviewing David Cleary, the Global Lead of Agriculture at the Nature Conservancy. David, tell us a little bit about what your role entails.
I'm the Global Agriculture Director for the Nature Conservancy. We have agriculture programs around the world, a very strong program in the United States, in every country in Latin America, with a couple of minor exceptions in East Africa, in Asia, in Indonesia, and in China. So my first priority is to support those programs, to help them in their strategic thinking, to ensure that we're all sort of like speaking with the same voice on issues that are important to us, and also fundraising for them. I do also handle several of the global level relationships that are relevant to agriculture for the Conservancy in both the public and the private sector, the World Bank, the International Finance Corporation, a couple of other global institutions like the Global Environment Facility, but also the larger companies, the multinationals that are important within the global agricultural economy. We do tend to focus on farmer and rancher facing companies because we see those as most relevant to delivering the environmental outputs we're interested in. But we also work with larger consumer facing brands, the Walmarts and McDonald's and a few others of the world. We're always on the lookout for ways in which we can have sort of integrated supply chain approaches to major environmental issues.
Within global agriculture, what areas specifically are you currently focused on?
In a nutshell, how to sustainably intensify at scale. At the global level, the major challenge the world agricultural economy faces is how it's going to expand production to meet increasing demand in a situation when there's only limited opportunities for you to expand by increasing your geographical footprint, and you're going to have to intensify your production systems more and more. Now, the history of that is not entirely happy because I think we've got a lot of successful examples of intensification if you look at how successful industrial agriculture has been in increasing yields, but that's come at an environmental cost. And I think moving forwards, we have to mitigate and in many cases try and eliminate those costs. And how to do that, I think, is the most pressing challenge that we face moving forward at a global level.
What is your perspective on the best ways to do that at the moment?
I'm a believer in technology for a lot of this, and I think there's some very exciting developments going on around precision agriculture that are sort of win-wins for both the farmers and the environment. I think to the extent that we can be much more targeted and selective in applying inputs, whether that's fertilizer, whether it's water or whatever else it is, that can lead to production gains with minimal or lower environmental impacts. We've already seen very concrete advances on the ground in large agricultural landscapes in places like the US. So that's really exciting. But the challenge, I think, is how can you translate those kinds of technological advances to very different settings around the world where you have farmers who are perhaps not as educated, who don't have access to as many resources, where the technological coverage is not as good as it is in the developed world. And I think that's a major issue moving forward and one that we're increasingly trying to grapple with.
And David, what is the role of multinational brands and business in this setting, in your opinion? And how is the Nature Conservancy and how are you working with global brands on this issue?
We're interested in brands because we feel, and companies, because we feel that they are incredibly important actors, both within landscapes and beyond landscapes. Beyond landscapes, we think they're really important because they determine the future direction of the agricultural economy. It's the way that product innovation happens within those companies. That's what really drives the direction that the agricultural economy goes through in the future. They're also really important in helping to shape the opinion of governments and multilateral institutions. I mean, governments, when they're thinking about how to regulate, do talk to the major companies and the company associations. So to the extent we can influence those, that's also a way of influencing the regulatory conversation as well. But I would say that the most directly important element of this for the Nature Conservancy is we do work on the ground in many places with farmers, and it's the incentives and the disincentives that companies put out. Those are fundamental drivers of farmer behavior. So to the extent we can influence those, we can also influence the direction and the incentive structure that farmers are working within. So at all levels, from the local farm all the way up to sort of to boardrooms and government ministries. We see that the brands and the companies as critical actors that we have to engage with if we're to be true to our mission.
David, what is a current partnership that you have that you're really excited about? I'm sure you're excited about all your collaboration, but is there one specific partnership that is driving a lot of progress that you would like to share with us?
It's sort of invidious to pick out a single partnership. So maybe I'll pick one which is actually a combination of partnerships. A lot of the work that we do with companies, we think can be done on a pre-competitive basis because a lot of the issues around the environment and sustainable intensification are actually pre-competitive issues. From our standpoint, it's more strategically sensible for us to work with coalitions of companies around a specific issue that reduces the transaction costs. And I think it also helps get the sector as a whole onto the same page rather than just working with individual companies. So I'm going to use one example, which is actually a system that we first had the idea of developing in conversation with Bunge, which is a major soy trader. And one of the shared concerns that we have is channeling agricultural expansion into land that's already been cleared. Now, that's partly an environmental question, which we're quite good at, being able to identify areas that have the right sort of topography, the right soils, and all the environmental stuff going to be viable for grain production. But at the same time, it's an economic question, because it's not just a question of being able to grow that grain physically, but whether it also you get a return on investment and whether it's economically viable. So we built a decision support system that incorporates layers of both economic and environmental information called AgroIdeal. But we felt it was critical to get sector buy-in to this. And so Bunge helped broker a number of conversations with other companies, both fellow soy traders, but also input companies like Syngenta with the finance sector, with Rabobank, for example, which is an important fund of agricultural work around the world. And so it was that coalition of companies, rather than an individual company, which essentially set the terms of reference for the design team, which the Conservancy put together, so we could guarantee that the system that we came up with would actually be responsive to and user-driven, rather than a tool that an environmental organization developed in isolation and then tried to sell to a sector. We didn't feel that that was the right way to go about it. And this is early days yet, because we only developed the first version of the tool last year. It's AgroIdeal. There is a website for those who are interested, agroideal.org. And the early signs are pretty encouraging. And we hope that in a number of tropical geographies, it will help steer agricultural expansion towards areas that are already cleared and towards soils and landscapes that are actually appropriate for the type of expansion that the sector needs.
What I wanted to ask you, you touched on this a little bit. What about the role of soil and soil health in sustainable agriculture? What do you think is the most pressing challenge to soil health in the US and abroad?
So this is a really interesting question, because I think one of the really interesting changes that's happened in the sustainable agriculture space over the last 5 or 6 years is that people have increasingly come to recognize that soil and soil health is an area that's been a little bit neglected in the past, not so much by farmers who've always been aware of the importance of soil health, and not so much by universities who've also always been aware of the role of soil health in agriculture. But it's been sort of ignored a little bit by the environmental organizations, and the role of soil in environmental questions generally has been downplayed. And I think that's changed over the last 3 or 4 years as people have come to realize that actually it's critical. And it's critical not just for its own merits, but because it's one of those examples of a real win-win for both nature and the economy. We define soil health as the level of organic matter within soil. And as soil organic matter increases over time, there's a number of environmental benefits that flow from that, but it also underpins increases in production. The healthier soil that you have, you don't only get better environmental outcomes, but you also get better yield outputs. And I'll give you one example of that. We have a really interesting project where we're working with a number of farmers in western Nebraska. It's like a mixed grain and livestock producing area. And we're able to sort of track how improved soil health is helping to lead to greater water retention within the soil and less runoff fertilizer from the fields where this work is being done, leading to increased water quality at the same time that yields from these areas are rising year on year. It's really important as we talk about the relationship between sustainable agriculture and the relationship between economy and the environment, to be able to reference specific concrete examples where this stuff is happening on the ground and to be able to point to places that you can walk around and see it happening. So this project that we have in Nebraska, it's you know, there's many other areas like that where farmers are grappling with these questions, where they're working in a very dedicated way on improving soil health. It's the kind of work that's quite unglamorous. It's sort of progress is incremental. You can only see the results after several years of investment and effort. But it's that kind of unglamorous work that I think really lies behind the long-term changes that we need to see. And so to be able to see that spreading across a landscape is one of the most rewarding things that we come across.
And what are your thoughts about the current state of water quality and conservation in the U.S. and how it is impacting agriculture?
I'd say guardedly optimistic. And I need to justify that because a lot of my colleagues on the environmental side would contest that. And they'd have some bullets in their gun as they contest it. And they would point to the fact that, well, you've got expanding dead zones in the Gulf of Mexico, where the main culprit is fertilizer runoff from the soy and corn complex in the upper Midwest running down the Mississippi. And that's what leaves those dead zones in the Gulf of Mexico. And they're right on that. But at the same time, I feel a lot of rising awareness among farmers in the US and among the organizations and companies as well of the importance of controlling water quality and doing a better job of this moving forwards. And nobody likes to see those algae blooms in the Great Lakes, in the Chesapeake. And I think there's a growing realization that this is a problem that needs fixing. The progress there, I think, is going to be measured in decades because it's a massive area and it's a complex multifactorial issue. But we see the spread of much better cropping and rotation systems around the soybean complex and the corn complex. We also see the spread of much more sophisticated fertilizer application regimes and reductions in runoff in several places. We see the rise of targeted efforts as the science gets better and precision agriculture allows us to target efforts in a much more systematic way. So my feeling is that we are going to see the results of these efforts several years down the road. The nature of the problem is it takes time to see that impact work its way through at a system level. But I do feel that on the water quality, you are seeing progress on the ground that will be reflected in the science a little bit down the road. As far as conservation of water goes, I think I can be more optimistic because I think it's clear that there's much greater awareness among farmers and among companies of the critical importance of water conservation. I think we've had episodes like the long-lasting droughts in California that have really brought that home. I think the whole perennial problems with wildfires and making people much more aware of the role that climate change is playing and the need to plan ahead and adapt to the likely impact that climate change is going to have. We see the spread of drip-fed irrigation systems and much more attention being paid to water conservation. So there again, I think that a lot of the effort on the ground is going to bring benefits in the future. And the only major known unknown that complicates this discussion, of course, is climate change. And I think there's still a lot of uncertainty around what the precise impacts at a sort of local and county level of climate change is going to be. And as long as that's the case, I think there's always going to be an element of uncertainty as we think about what the sort of issues around water in the future are going to look like in the US.
My last question would be, if you could create consensus and collective action on one timely issue related to sustainable agriculture, what would that be and how would you go about it?
That's a very interesting question. So I'm going to make an assumption here because obviously my answer would be a little bit different if I was speaking to a government audience or to an NGO audience or to a company audience. So I'm going to respond as if I'm speaking to a company audience. So here I think is the issue, which is I think that everybody all along the supply chain, whether you're consumer facing or farmer facing, I think most people, the vast majority of companies go into this with good intent and they want to do the right thing. If I could select one thing, it would be companies that are facing pressure from consumers, you know, to get their environmental act together. And that happens over a whole range of things in the US and elsewhere. It's not enough for them to just send a demand signal down the supply chain to say for, okay, we want to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions, or we want to sort of provide organic produce or whatever the consumer demand is. The demand signal is an important part, and I think the suppliers need to hear that demand signal. But in order to deliver that supply, I think there has to be a much higher degree of collaboration along the supply chain between the consumer-facing companies and the farmer-facing companies. And I do see that happening to a very significant extent. I can call out a couple of companies who I think are particularly making particular efforts in this regard. But I think it does need to be much more widespread. I think there does need to be a much more collaborative approach along supply chains. I think there needs to be many more coalitions of the willing between the consumer-facing companies and the farmer-facing companies. Because if there isn't the farmer-facing end of this, it just gets perceived as this sort of demand that they're not getting any help to be able to supply. They don't really understand the reason behind the demand. It's perceived as a criticism or a critique of the way that they've been operating in the past. And again, they don't understand the reasons for that. So in the end, improved environmental outcomes and improved yield is only ever delivered by farmers and by ranchers or by producers who are on the ground. Right. So everybody has to be thinking about how can we make it easier for them to do this? Because you can't do it all just by a regulatory stick. There has to be economic carrots there. And there are some out there, and there's a work being done in this area. But I think that's the single most important challenge that I'd point to, and the single thing that if I could wave a magic wand, that's the thing I would like to see happening much more.
David, thank you so much for making time for this podcast. And we are very excited to be collaborating with you and the Nature Conservancy on this upcoming conference.
Yeah, and it's a real great pleasure for us to be able to host. We're a science-based organization. We love to sort of be able to facilitate the conversations that I'm sure that this event will catalyze.
Thank you so much, David.
A pleasure.